It's the Puppet Parent Podcast, episode 44. In this episode, we'll talk about our one-year streamiversary, World Puppetry Day, and a huge event we were part of, shooting new puppetry films, and heading back to NYC in late May. It's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Puppet Parent Podcast.
I'm Z.
I'm Chad.
And we are puppeteers.
We're parents.
And we have a podcast.
Hey, welcome everyone to World Puppetry Day. That's right. If you missed it a week ago, we're bringing it back.
What is this, like World Puppetry Day observed?
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Us?
It's a Greek Orthodox World Puppetry Day.
No. No, but
right.
but last weekend there was lots of things happening.
Yes. We didn't get to record because we were so super busy. I mean, among other things. So let's talk about World Puppetry Day. It was popularized not too long ago.
Yeah, there used to be a National Day of Puppetry, which was organized by Puppeteers of America, and at one point they were doing both World Puppetry Day and National Day of Puppetry, and then I think finally all the organizations, UNIMA USA, which is the International Puppetry Organization, and that's our faction, the USA faction, and Puppeteers of America.
I think we should call it like a branch, not a faction. Let's say factions are like. Feels like
group?
We're like terrorist cells.
Oh,
factions.
I didn't mean that. I just anyway, whatever words.
Wing. Let's say the American wing of that organization.
Yes, I always feel like I need to clarify because UNIMA doesn't sound like anything to do with puppetry, unless you're a puppeteer. Whereas Puppeteers of America is like very clear. You know, UNIMA comes from an acronym that is French.
Right.
So like that is why. The font. So anyway.
The M in UNIMA stands for marionette, I think.
A few years ago, our two organizations in the United States, UNIMA USA and Puppeteers America, joined forces and said, you know what? National Day of Puppetry can also be World Puppetry Day, and let's just all celebrate World Puppetry Day. And I'm so glad that we did that because we can just put all of our focus and efforts into that and raising the awareness of puppetry as an art form in so many different ways. So what did you do for World Puppetry Day, Chad?
But thank you for asking, ZX. I was very busy on World Puppetry Day. 1 week ago, I had so much to do, actually. Did we perform? I don't know if I think I had a show that morning. So I was streaming out in the studio. Yeah, I think it was like an 11 o'clock show. Probably a birthday party. Maybe like a pre-Passover show. But then it was at 3 o'clock, I had a presentation. So I had all kinds of things to do. So, I was a guest speaker for UNIMA USA. I'm on the board of UNIMA USA. Like, I help to run their social media. But also, you know, like, I'm in the puppetry community, which is small. I'm one of the streaming people that people go to for, like, tech advice and streaming advice and stuff like that. So they're like, hey, why don't you present what you did during the pandemic, right? Because it's been 1 year. That's right, Z.
Oh, ring a bell. I don't know.
You ready?
Oh.
Cheers. Cheers, lady.
Cheers.
Ding. 1 year. It's our 1 year streamiversity.
I don't want to drink this. This looks so gross.
Don't drink that. Here. We'll clink the glasses.
Here, I have my tea.
That's all I could find in the fridge down here that I was like, all right, I'm pretty sure she will drink
that. Oh, no. But no. Sorry.
There you go. Ding. It's our one year streamiversary just happened to coincide with National Day of Puppetry.
World Puppetry Day.
Excuse me, World Puppetry Day. Man, you got me saying that the old way. So it was like there's so many things where this feels like the right thing to do, to talk about, like it's been 1 year, what did we learn? Where have we come from? Where are we going? And so I made this whole presentation about cute cats. Like pictures of cute cats and how we survived a global pandemic by streaming all of our shows.
Oh, I would love to see that presentation. I didn't get to see it, so.
Let me tell you, if I wasn't just streaming on this one machine, if I had a second monitor, I could just bring it right in. Maybe I'll share that online.
Yeah, you should, maybe. Or we'll do it. I don't know. I just want to see it. I'm interested.
There's a lot of cute cats. So as we were introing So all these different people, they had like 15 people on the dais of like, mm-hmm. all right, there's all these different people presenting all this different stuff. And I was just one of them. And as they were going down the line, because
on Zoom, so
we're in Zoom. There's supposed to be 300 people. It's free, so only 150 people showed up, which is perfect. Uh-huh. 150 people are watching us talk about like a little 2-minute like little snippets about what if you come into my breakout room.
Oh, your pitch.
You will see. Yeah, a little pitch.
So, what was your room number? What breakout room did you have?
It wasn't a number because they were so on top of things that they labeled their breakout rooms.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that you could do that.
We had a tech rehearsal and everything. Yeah. You know, Unima USA is on point. Well, it was a joint Unima USA Puppeteers of America venture. That's how it should be. The crossover between those two organizations is crazy. Anyway, if you're a member of one, you're probably a member of the other.
And if you're not, maybe you should consider it because they're really great organizations. The Puppeteers of America puts out the quarterly magazine, Puppetry Journal, which is a really fantastic, I think it's a great way of preserving the history for us of what's been happening in puppetry regularly. And you can go back to the 1930s and see what's been happening in puppetry in the United States because of Puppeteers America and their quarterly publications or yearly publications. And then Unima USA, the international branch of the Unima organization, they put out a biannual magazine, like twice a year.
Twice a year
magazine, which is more of an academic magazine, it's very well thought out, super nice in bookstores, I think, and
in university libraries.
Yes, it's like a university level academic, more academic publication, talking about the theory of puppetry, like trends in puppetry, and they collect essays and put and write about them. So both are very valuable and important aspects of our field and give like some street cred to like what we do, you know. Yeah. And it helps to bridge the communication between the states and what's happening internationally in puppetry all over the world, because every country has their own puppetry culture and traditions.
And a lot of countries have an Unima. Like, mm-hmm. we'll talk about that in a little bit. So during this presentation by the Puppeteers of America and Unima USA, I'm getting ready to give my pitch, my 2-minute pitch for, more like 60-second pitch for people to come into my breakout room because in the back of my mind, I'm like, nobody's going to come into my breakout room because, you know, I've taught so many puppeteers how to stream, you know, like that was our thing, you know, like we teamed up with Ibex, Heather Henson's company, and mm-hmm. I taught like gotta be a couple hundred puppeteers how to stream, like the basics, the essentials, how to do it, what I do. We had like a Q&A, like we have a Facebook group where people plug their streaming stuff or ask questions and we kind of crowdsource mm-hmm. it. And at this point, I'm like, all right, it's a year in. Anybody who wanted to know how to stream probably already did it or is just like on their own learning. Mm-hmm. So and I'm going to do this presentation, which is essentially a victory lap for me because it's been a year. And I'm like, well, I've looked through all the stats from my presentation. This is how many shows we streamed last year is 185.
Wow.
This is the percentage of shows that we lost from last year. Only 45% less shows in 2020 than 2019. And stuff like that. And I'm listening to the other speakers give their pitches. And I'm like, oh man, I want to abandon mine and go jump in there. Like you have two of the more prominent, if you're in these organizations, Black American puppeteers talking about like, yo, we're going to be talking about diversity over in this breakout room. And they're like, ooh, man, can I just do 30 minutes of mine and then jump over in there? You know, I'm like, oh man, Adam Krutinger is also going to talk about building puppets and Puppet Pie is also doing a presentation, you know, talking about like what they do. Our friend Stacy and like all of our friends doing an amazing thing. So I'm like, oh man, thankfully they record and like everybody, hopefully fingers crossed, recorded their breakout rooms. I did.
Yeah.
Uploaded them and we will be sharing those soon.
Oh, great.
So You'll get to see the cute cats and how we stream through the global pandemic in video form with me narrating. We'll share it on our Facebook wall.
Great.
So if you're listening to this, it'll be out there somewhere. Okay. Over on facebook.com/WonderSparkPuppets, we'll definitely have a link. And I'll be just breezing through all of our friends who made these other awesome presentations on World Puppetry Day. What was crazy about World Puppetry Day is because the entire world operates in different time zones. Hey, look, somebody popped up in chat.
Yeah.
Who is that? Wow, it's Audi finalist. Z Briggs.
Oh, the Audi Award?
Audi Award finalist for 2020
for her groundbreaking. I wasn't a finalist, but the podcast was a finalist. I need to say that because it was a lot of people who worked together to make that project happen. And so, not to derail your conversation, I was literally just checking to see if that worked. But
she posted hi in chat.
Which you should too if you're watching.
I just got to give props because you were the host. You know, you are the main focus. You're the glue that brings it all together. If you didn't do a good job on the Sesame Street podcast starring Foley and friends, it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have been nominated, dude.
Well,
so congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It's really exciting to have been nominated for anything, you know, I'm just so happy to have gotten to do that project. I'm hopeful that maybe, who knows, if there's going to be some more in the future. But if you haven't checked it out, Sesame Street Podcast with Foley and Friends is an Audible exclusive podcast. But if you're a member of Audible, you get it for free. And it's great. It's like 15-ish minutes each episode. So if you're taking your kids somewhere and you don't want them to be watching something on a screen because maybe they've been doing a lot of screen time for the last year, like our kids, then you can listen to this in the car. And I'll tell you them, even my almost soon to be 6-year-old, listened to an episode and I don't even know if he knew it was me or not.
But he
enjoyed it. Oh, he absolutely enjoyed it. Yeah, he listened to the episode about family, which is the last episode we did. And I love that one because we leave the studio and go out onto Sesame Street.
What?
And so we're like on the street, what? Running into friends. Big Bird's there. I don't want to give it all away, but it's super fun to like, you know, we broke out of the studio and we're just like walking down the street with our microphones, interviewing our friends.
Can we talk about how this is, maybe, because I know Sesame Workshop is awesome. They've probably done something like this, but this might be the first, if not the greatest thing that Sesame has pulled together for kids who can't really see super well.
For visually impaired kids?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would be really great for visually impaired kids. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even thought about that. And also just for people who are more auditory learners, I know that I've learned that about myself, that I really like having an audio input. It calms me having audio input like throughout the day. And if you're on Clubhouse, I'm on Clubhouse. It's a new app and it only works on the iPhone. Sorry, Android people. I'm sure that they're going to make it work for you guys too. But I'm there and I kind of participate and in lots of different ways. And I've really found that to be wonderful and a great way to listen to live music. The audio quality isn't amazing, but it's not bad. And what's really fun is that I get that kind of fix a little bit of feeling like I left a little, like I left this environment, this space, and I'm interacting with people I don't know, which is something that I realized I really miss. You know, I miss interacting with people I don't know, and I don't really get to do that outside of like emails for work, which have to be super formal. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if you're on Clubhouse, say hi to me, follow me. I'm
what's your Clubhouse handle?
WonderSpark, I think.
Oh man,
is my Clubhouse handle. But I think we have to be in the same room. But anyways, you could, I don't know if you can search for people. You just have to like bump into me. But I'm the room that I'm in a lot. Monday, Wednesday, Friday is the.
You're gonna get some stalkers.
No. It's all good. The room I'm in a lot is a co-productivity room for people who self-identify or have been diagnosed with ADHD. And it's 25-minute sprints where we work silently for 25 minutes. And this guy named Hyla started it, and it's really, I love it. I love it because there's a few people who will say, like a handful of people will say what they're going to work on for 25 minutes, and there's a whole bunch of us down in the audience, is what you call the people who are not speaking, who are like listening in and just being like self-aware, like I too will do something for 25 minutes. And then they say, go! And then you don't, it's silent in the room. So I listen to an audiobook or a podcast or something that I like, or music. And then at like 15 minutes, they'll say, okay, it's been, you know, you have 10 minutes left. And then at 5 minutes left, they say 5 minutes left. And I love it. I love it. Because I've tried to do this Pomodoro sprints before, because I've looked up how my brain works. I'm not diagnosed with ADHD, and I'm not saying that I have ADHD, but I might. I don't know. I have a lot of tendencies, all the good and all the bad. And that's like part of who I am, and I'm starting to like self-acknowledge that. And but it also is helping me to get work done in a solo environment with nobody around, which is something I've struggled with for a long time. You know, being good about time management and how long do things take and staying on task. So I'd heard about the Pomodoro method and I tried it before, of course, and lists and brain dumps and all of these things. If you are a person who has a brain similar to mine, I'm sure you have also heard about these things. But the accountability when there's no one around to say, hey, I'm going to do something for 25 minutes and there's nobody around. I mean, I'm not a good self-advocate for myself when it comes down to it. And having just somebody who I've never met say, all right, see you in 25, is great. And I love the 25 instead of the 45.
Let's say somebody that you've never met that is definitely not your spouse or a robot alarm clock that you've set for yourself.
No, robot alarm clock doesn't count.
Yeah.
No, because that's like a timer, you know, mm-hmm. It doesn't, I can set the timer.
It's not the same.
No.
Yeah.
No. And we could do it together as well, but we don't work at the same time most of the time. We work in shifts, and if I'm working, Chad's with the kids, and if I'm with the kids, Chad's working, and that's just the way it is. It's very rare until they're probably back in school that we will both be working on something simultaneously. And like I hit my stride in the afternoon and then into the evening, and Chad tends to hit his stride first thing in the morning.
Instantly when I wake up.
I don't understand it, but that's his happy time to like be creative, get things done. And mine is not then.
Mm-hmm. So, well, how you feel when you first wake up is how I feel in the afternoon to evening, especially as I'm getting like more tired. Mm-hmm. So I think like we've talked about this often on the podcast.
Well, it's ongoing.
We are opposites in that way, but that makes us a super team.
Well, things get done. Like we made a rainbow and we made some other stuff. Can we segue?
Let's talk about that. I had so many good segues and then we got
segueing
out of it. So
we made
a film. We made another film, you guys. You thought we were done making films. They're like, yo, they adapted a beloved children's book classic, The Someone Knew, by this amazing, as seen on TV, author Jill Twiss. Yo, no, that's why we're not done. Mm-mm.
No, Chad wanted to give us more projects.
Everyone was super happy with that. Clients are happy. We're happy. Premiered well. Kids happy. Yes. No, we took...
Because
I run social media for Unuma USA, I am Fulbright specialist looking to teach internationally, and I'm just super interested in leaving this country and going out into the world. It's my new favorite thing. Don't touch the microphone with that, or else the audience at home will hear. So I got my ear to the ground, and I'm picking up the frequency, the vibrations of things happening internationally in the puppet world. And one of those things, which I always share on Unuma USA's social media page, by the way, on Instagram and Facebook, if you're so inclined, is so cute. If you can't see this, if you're just listening, Z has the puppet.
The cutest little chipmunk ever.
Yeah, and she's wiggling its tail
from
all around.
Jill Twiss's book, The Someone Knew, that we made for that. But then, you know, it's a chipmunk, so we can use it for other things
too. Yeah, and you made it.
I did.
That's right. And Dr. Perkins is here.
From scratch.
And she says she loves your hat.
I know. It says my happy place, and it's a picture of Disney. Disney. Disney, I'll come back to you. I love Disney. Aww. I do. I went through a whole phase where I was like, you know, ugh, Disney, they're so corporate. And I've come back around to, no, actually, I love Disney. And it, you know what? Whatever. Like, things get big. And there's a reason. It makes a lot of people happy. And it makes me happy. And here's all my money. And I want to come back when everything is safe. And I can't wait.
So. I had that, that turnaround. I was definitely like a meat eating person with certain opinions when I was a teenager. Then I went to college and saw these like documentaries that just random college students made that are like, corporate America's the problem. And look at these anarchists. They're the best. And the people smashing windows in Seattle are heroes and stuff. And I was like, wow, I'd never been exposed to this before. Cool. Awesome. Great. I'm totally down. And was like, and my parents would get me like a pair of Gap jeans or something for my birthday, and I would hiss, Gap, Old Navy, kids in cages in Indonesia, get that away from me. Now, I'm not for that now, but I'm looking back at that period in my life with a fresh set of eyeballs, feeling like, the inherent bias. When a documentarian makes a film is something that I maybe should have considered or learned to consider a little sooner.
Well, all these things are more complicated than just one viewpoint. And I think that just comes with life and maturity, that aspect. But it also makes it a lot harder to, like, have an opinion about it. Like, what's your opinion about Disney?
Well, I don't know.
Yes. I like it. I like it. But anyway, I don't wear a lot of Disney stuff, but I wear it sometimes.
Wait, what's your hoodie?
Oh, well.
Let's see it.
It's from a Miyazaki film called Spirited Away, and it's the dragon at the end of the film.
That's right.
I love it.
It's
also Disney-ish because they help to distribute the films here in the States and are, like, you know, influenced a lot by Miyazaki.
Yeah, well, let's say old Miyazaki. Let's say Grandpa Miyazaki, because we haven't watched their films lately, and lately the internet and other nerds have been saying, like, it's not as good.
Oh,
it's not as good.
Well,
sorry.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Without Grandpa.
Kind of loved everything that I've seen, that I have seen. But they're so good that I kind of, like, take long breaks between watching them, because it's like I like to let it marinate in my soul. Like, when I see something that's really transformative for me or intense, I can't watch anything else for a while. Like, I haven't even been able to watch the last episode of WandaVision because the second to last episode was so intense that I just can't bring myself to watch the last episode.
You know, I just realized something.
What's that?
You know what we just did?
What?
We were talking about these Miyazaki films.
Yes.
That is actually not the name of the company that makes those films.
Oh, Studio Ghibli.
But we named the person that is responsible for all these films and the way that they turned out.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we named the thing that kept us coming back. That's why he's retired, and, you know, those new films. People are saying, not me, but people are saying, like, it's not as good without the horrible old man cracking the whip and saying anime was a mistake.
Anyway.
The self-loathing old perfectionist was the secret sauce the whole time, you guys.
Well, I think that people's life stories can really be a huge part of how they operate and the stories that they want to tell. And I don't know his life story, and I don't know what it is that drives him to be such a perfectionist, but I do know that the work that he's created that I have seen, and I've seen maybe about 5 of his films, it was, like I said, transformative for me. I would watch it, and then I feel like, wow, there's a lot to think about. And so then I don't watch one for a long time. Like, maybe I watch one a year about at this point, or I'll rewatch one. And then if I feel like I'm ready for a new one, then I'll watch a new one. But yeah. I also like knowing that there's things I haven't seen yet, so that it's not like I've run out, because they're so special to me. And I don't own a ton of stuff, but I do love this sweatshirt. So anyway, I feel like it's become my uniform because I think I've worn it a number of times. This hat, this sweatshirt.
It's comfy.
I do change my clothes, you guys. It's just that we happen to record on a weekend and, you know.
Sometimes you have 7 long sleeve shirts.
And this is my Sunday outfit.
Every time people see you. You know, that's what you're wearing. I thought about that when I was going into the Unima board meeting. I was like, wait a second, what did I wear last time? And then scroll down those videos to see, like, is this the same exact outfit? You know, because I want to be seen as, like, you know, more than a one-shirt-having person.
Well, when we used to film this video game review show called Little Miss Gamer that I used to do, I had, yes, capsule wardrobe. I love the idea. You know what? I have dreams of just being Smurfette, basically, and just opening up my closet and just having the same dress, honestly, where it's just like I have a... what is that called? A uniform. My uniform. Or I have a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, and a Friday outfit. And I've almost gotten there. I'm working on it. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, man, something shiny. I don't even know.
We're talking about clothes.
Clothes.
Talking about Studio Ghibli films.
No,
I was going to ask you, how long has it been since you've seen Princess Mononoke? Because I could go for that.
Oh, a really long time. So we could watch that because I remember the first time I saw that was when I was living in Long Island with the Riverhead contingent theater people, Vision Theater. I couldn't think of it for half a second.
You were living in a shotgun shack. You were living in a slum, in a building that was falling apart. I came to visit you, and the front door was on the floor, and
that was our doormat.
And there were three people.
That's what we called our doormat. Was the door
three people per room, and plus guests.
Yep.
It was amazing. It was incredible, and you could only pull it off when you are 20 something with a dream.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of people. I think. I don't know if it was like 15 or 18 people in one house. It was a lot. And I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but they're definitely like rooms separated by blankets and hallways and stuff. And that it was a fun thing to do for a while. And yeah, we all had a dream.
I had a dream.
Yeah.
I had a dream.
I helped out. I lived in Riverhead, Long Island for a summer, you guys. It's an interesting place. I don't know why we're talking about that now.
So let's go back.
This is what I mean. My brain is like a pinball machine.
Let's go back. So
yes.
Bring out that beautiful chipmunk puppet. Let's talk about it for real.
Oh, yeah.
We got sidetracked out of
so
there.
Cute.
If you're watching, there's beautiful chipmunk puppets.
So cute. Look, it has this kind of action, or it can move its body.
Yay.
And it has a cute little fluffy tail.
Look at that.
It's made out of a combination of... Muppet fleece. The white is Muppet fleece.
So
and then this is
Antron fleece?
Yeah, I think that's what they call it. Antron fleece. Thank you, Chad.
Sure.
And felt. And then wool that I needle felted into the felt for the stripes here, the brown stripes and the little brown accents like the feet at the bottom there. And then these are safety eyes for the eyes and a little wool felt nose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then dowels.
So, we use this puppet.
Oh.
We
don't do that, guys.
Z created this puppet for a film that we shot in a week. That we did this book called The Someone Knew. It's a story about a snail coming into this chipmunk's neighborhood, and the chipmunk is like, freaking out about it. It's an allegory, of course, for the immigrant crisis in America and how people should be less xenophobic and more open-minded in a children's story.
It's very nice. We were brought into a project that was already happening. Our friend couldn't complete the project because she was super sick.
Mm-hmm.
So we stepped in to help save... the day for lots of people. And we completed the project, made these miniature versions of the puppets because that was more in line with the kind of things that we film as well, and helped to tell the full story of the book. And so we have all these cute miniature puppets, and we will share a link to the video in the...
We have. No. Many times.
We have. Oh,
many
okay.
times. This is old news.
Well, okay. So, yeah. Yes.
We had that under our belts. On top of that, we were shooting a second film, which we completed just yesterday, just this past mm-hmm. weekend, using some of the same puppets because you just have what you're...
Use
what you got. We already have the stuff. It's cute. It's adorable. The for Unima Korea. So, as I was saying, I have my ear to the ground, and one of the things that I shared on the Unima USA's social media feed was that... Unima Korea is having a film contest, guys. They're saying, hey, if anybody can create a short film, 2 minutes only, utilizing this special Korean paper called Hanji, which Z is gathering right now. Guess what? There's cash prizes. It's the bonds of international friendship shall be woven between us. And I was like, yes, absolutely. That's everything in my world. We are filmmakers. We've made many short film, maybe many feature film. And we have all the stuff. We have a studio at our disposal. Thank you, Springville Center for the Arts. Excuse me. Let's do it. And I technically have family in Korea. Technically.
It's so pretty.
Look at this Hanji that
and
she's holding
up. You can't
up.
Really see it, but it's like this beautiful handmade paper, and it's very fibrous. Mm-hmm. And when we went to the Hanji Museum website to learn more about Hanji, because
kind of see through it.
They have a whole website from the town that it has made famous, the Hanji.
It has all these fibers. It's from like a walnut or a chestnut tree.
It's beautiful.
Bark, I think.
And it's very thick. It's like the perfect paper for papier-mâché. Like I saw it and I immediately was like, well, we have to papier-mâché something because it's just so beautiful. And then we didn't really have time to make a puppet necessarily because
our plan was we came together and we brainstormed because that's what Z likes to do.
I do like to brainstorm.
She likes to have both of us brainstorming at the same time. That is not my way.
It's fun.
But we did it.
We did.
And Z came up with an idea and I said, "Yes, let's shoot it. It sounds great. Simple, easy, let's do it." So I started shooting a month ago. We just wrapped. So basically, the story is the chipmunk is working on this arts and crafts project, and that was our whole thing, is that it makes a rainbow and it lights up everyone's day, because at the time we were staring at this huge American death toll in the face, you know, which is still a thing in our country, and the winter was so oppressive and we were ready for the spring. So why can't the chipmunk make a rainbow inside their little cave? Oh no, it looks like the camera has crashed. So hold on one second here.
Oh, I touched something. You might have to.
And we're back.
Yay,
look at that.
Okay.
Boom.
Good.
So the chipmunk makes a rainbow and it cheers everybody up and they have a little dance party.
So this is made out of just that paper. It's not plugged in. Sorry. Oops. Sorry about the microphone bump there.
Nope, you plug it in right there though.
Oh, yes, I suppose you could. Okay.
Here, I'm going to do it.
All right. Don't bump the camera.
Trying not to.
It's quite finicky. Anyway, oh, there it goes.
There you go. Yay!
So this is made out of the Hanji paper that we received and some white glue. And I papier-mâché'd it. I made it, and it's hollow. Look, here's the inside.
Look at that. Look at that EL wire.
And
is it EL wire?
I don't know. I call it fairy lights. And so then we got some fairy lights and attached them to the inside, and they twinkle. So we now have,
yay.
We are now the proud owners of a twinkling rainbow.
Yes. Utilizing
and
the
may
special...
this be a symbol of the light to come, that we are going to go back to New York City and things are going to be awesome, hopefully. Yay. So anyway, that's what we worked on. It was very exciting.
I'm disengaging the Hanji rainbow from the power source. So we'll
have to find a special place.
We shot this thing. We shot all the in-studio stuff yesterday. I've been also shooting stuff outside. So it's a film. It's a 2-minute film about, it starts in winter and then we keep checking in with the chipmunk who's like making the rainbow, and like their friend comes in and is like, is it time yet? Not yet. And then it's like, and then the snow is starting to melt and we check in again. And then just yesterday when it was like a bright sunny day and the grass is starting to poke out and I got some time-lapse footage of some snow melting off of some things. It's finally time. Spring is here. Up comes the rainbow. It's a dance party. It's all this music. And then the puppets go outside and play in the blue sky and stuff. So
yeah,
it's 2 minutes. It was super fun to do. And I hope that so at first we were one of the only participating countries and we were the only one. We're the only Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That changed. Mm-hmm. That changed because we put out an unboxing video that on WonderSpark's Facebook page that Unima Korea and the official Hanji Museum in Korea were like, can you send us the raw video of that, please, so we can share it? And we wound up with us and a puppeteer from Kenya and a couple other puppeteers from Europe. Like Denmark specifically, we drummed up a bunch of interest and now there's 60 participating companies from 30 different countries. And it's going to be this big deal, you guys. So I'm hoping, I think Hanji Day or something like it is on like April 5th, I think, or something like that in Korea. So I'm assuming the premiere will be then. But as soon as it's out there, we can't share it yet. But as soon as we can, we will.
And I was so inspired by all the colors. They were so bright and cheerful. And then there's a lot of paper lanterns that were on the brochure that they sent us from the Hanji Museum, and they were illuminated. And so I thought, oh, we have to do something with illuminating this beautiful paper. And so, yep, just white glue. And you want to get the rainbow right there?
The cardboard?
Yeah, just for people who don't understand like process or want to know process. So I made a cardboard form of the rainbow. I could have made it more arced, but this was just easier in terms of what we were doing. I needed something that could like self-sustain its own weight a little bit, and like having the arc be like this was a lot easier. Just trust me, you guys. So here's my hollow cardboard rainbow. And then I covered this whole thing with aluminum foil. And then when you're doing paper mache, well, actually, then I had to measure this to see how long it is and then split it into six because rainbow, you know, you couldn't have two, like one really big red stripe and then like not enough room for the rest of the stripes. So all the stripes had to be about the same size. So I had to measure this, make sure they're all the same size. And then when you're cutting for paper mache, you don't want to use scissors. You want to hand tear so that the fibers kind of meld into themselves and make new paper, right, with the glue. And so you cover the whole thing on either side, except I left this open so that it would be easier to take off.
So the opposite side she's talking about.
Yes. So this side was covered with tin foil, aluminum foil.
Why aluminum foil?
The glue will not stick to it. It will separate if you encourage it enough. Mm. So that's why this was able to come out with little to no tearing. Once it was dry.
And she did this specifically to make a hollow rainbow so she could put the lights inside.
Yes, that's right. And also so I could take it off. Yeah, so that it didn't have the cardboard because I wanted it to be translucent. Like, I could have put it back on it afterwards, but it was just easier for lots of reasons to just have it be open on the back. So
I think it looks great. The film is done.
Rainbow.
We submitted it a couple days early, which is like, that's my MO. Is like a couple days early is right on time.
Rainbow.
Yeah, I want this in our apartments.
Yeah, it'll make its way back to New York City.
Bring it back.
So
speaking of which, we're going back.
Oh yeah, news.
I don't know if this. I think we talked about this last time.
Well, we were considering it. We were having cautious discussions, and you know, Chad is vaccinated-ish. You're halfway.
Tomorrow's my second shot.
Oh, I didn't even realize that was tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Well,
congratulations. So you're driving back up to Syracuse, right?
Yes.
To get your second shot.
I'm driving three and a half hours up to up to Syracuse to stand in line like a big cattle line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully this will go a little. It took me like an hour waiting last time, so I'm hoping at an hour or less. I'm hoping there won't be an old man getting way too close to me, like putting his mask barely on. He was just like, this old man was like a mess. It was like, everybody's standing 6 feet apart. Everybody's 6 feet apart. We understand everybody's wearing their masks. We're all here to get vaccinated because we care about ourselves and our loved ones. And except for the guy right behind me, who is just like like a foot away, leaning on the fence that separates everybody, just like huffing with his nose exposed, just like, and every time the line moved just a little bit, he would move right behind me like a Japanese ghost, like creepingly, and I would just like get, turn around and give him like an eyeball. I guess I could have said something, but at that point I was just like, I don't want to talk to anybody.
Were you
just
outside?
No, we're inside. We're in the State Fair Exhibition Hall.
Oh, I've never been there.
So, well.
I know my friend Molly lives quite close to there.
Let me tell you, there are a lot of places you can get vaccinated in New York State, but that place is open all the time, 24/7, baby. You could get,
oh, really?
You get a shot at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
I don't know if it's 24/7, but yeah, like if you go on the State Department's vaccination website and look at the times available, I'm sure if you're listening to this and you haven't gotten vaccinated in New York State, you could get a slot right now for 3 a.m.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. I'm waiting to be eligible. I'm excited. So whenever I get to be eligible, that's when I will start looking to find where I'm going to get vaccinated. But my guess is that I will probably be vaccinated in my county of origin in Queens. Right. So,
but I've heard so many horror stories from
not origin, but where I live,
from people in New York City that are like, New York City hospitals are not great, you know,
there's a lot of options though for getting vaccinated in New York City, not hospitals necessarily. Like the Aqueduct is a place, the airport's a place,
right, the Javits Center.
Yeah, there's so many options. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will probably end up going to LaGuardia is my guess. And I can even walk to LaGuardia. Like, it's possible. Mm-hmm. It's a long walk. I definitely want a good book to listen to on the way.
You can take the bus.
I'm not riding public transportation until I get
true.
Vaccinated.
That's true, yeah.
So, until I'm fully vaccinated. And even then, our kids are not vaccinated yet. And
yeah,
I
things.
Have some feelings about, you know, I'm still a little, like, concerned about that. And in a way that... I don't know. I can't feel calm, like fully calm about it, but I'm trying to feel more calm based on the temperature that everybody else is at around me, because I definitely feel like I'm the alarmist in the room a lot of time, and I am tired of feeling that way. And maybe I need to turn down the self-preservation alarm, because my self-preservation alarm has been on since March 1st, basically, of last year. And it hasn't shut off. And I am exhausted from feeling like we need to survive.
Yeah, all that stress will wreck your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to let the waves of acceptance, mm-hmm. of acceptance wash over you, and getting vaccinated will help with that. You know, and we're still going to be social distancing and mask wearing and mm-hmm. and staying off of public transit as much as we can, you know, but we will be back in New York City doing in-person shows. I mean, we bought the liability insurance. We're back on it, you know, just like a regular old year. And we're going to go back and see what's what. And the great thing about forcing yourself back is that we have deadlines. We have gigs, in-person gigs lined up for June.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to kind of like, all right, it's kind of like we're dipping our toes into the water, but now the momentum is like taking us into the water, if that makes a lot of sense. So it's happening. It's happening. And,
yeah.
And we're going back. June 1st, we'll be out of here. Yep. So there's so much planning that needs to do about getting all of our stuff, all of our shows, which is the entire carload, out
of
the studio space we've been in for, you know, for at that point, it will be 1 year.
And it's quite likely that, well, I don't know, I might be able to get vaccinated when I do our first load back to New York City. Like, that would be mm-hmm. ideal. So I a lot of things in life just kind of happen, and I'm kind of letting the vaccine for me kind of just happen when it's supposed to happen, and I'm still not eligible. So when I'm eligible, I feel like something's going to happen that it'll be very clear, like, and now you get to get vaccinated. So I'm really excited about feeling that sense of calm, hopefully.
Thanks.
And then, you know, the kids' rooms they are a year older, and a year ago we were going to get them bunk beds. Like, if you can imagine, they were still sleeping in their cribs, in a sense. Like, their cribs converted into toddler beds, and then our older son had a very special relationship with his bed. He really didn't want to let it go, so we finally convinced everybody that this is a great idea. We're going to get bunk beds, but there's no way for me to get bunk beds until I get the room measured. So we have some requests out to some friends who have been utilizing the space to please measure the room. I'm going to buy bunk beds, and I'm going to go back a few weeks before we do the big move in and redo the room by myself with hopefully new bunk beds. And so if anybody has suggestions of bunk beds, I've been looking at Pottery Barn Kids, which is expensive, but ooh, they look beautiful.
But Pottery Barn is usually high quality. But you get what you pay for.
Yes, I want really beautiful, sturdy beds. And then, you know, if we have to end up getting rid of them in a few years, somebody else will want beautiful, really high-quality, sturdy beds. Or I might be able to find what we need used if I have something specific in mind. So if anybody has suggestions for nice beds, my son is really, one of my sons, really excited.
Did you just do my son? Oh. One of my sons.
No, yeah, it's a David Sedaris reference from my home, one of my homes, which I love that. I love that bit. David Sedaris, if you're ever watching, we're BFFs. You don't know, but I know. He really wants drawers in the stairs. He doesn't want a ladder going up to the bed. He wants stairs, and I get that. It's easier, especially in the middle of the night, to navigate stairs than it is to navigate a ladder. And We're going to see what can fit in the room easily, and if we can have a built-in desk into one of the sides or something, I don't know, drawers underneath one of the beds. There's a lot of options out there. So anyway, if you guys have ideas for a very tiny room with a radiator that doesn't move, then let us know, because basically their whole room is going to end up being like a bed, in a sense.
But they're older. I mean, when we went a year ago, when we were getting ready to celebrate his birthday, he's like, wow, you're finally turning 7, we're gonna get you out of that crib. And then
the pandemic happened.
Well, when we went back to New York City for reasons that are why we go
we
back?
We voted,
so it was November. We were looking at him laying in that crib, and he can't lay down with his legs out. He's too big.
Oh, he was perfectly happy to be in it.
Oh, I know.
But and then here, he doesn't really like the bunk beds here because they are not a traditional bunk bed, and there's not enough height between the mattress and the... He likes to be in the lower bunk, and he's banged his head a number of times. And I don't know if that's the reason why, but lately he's been wanting to sleep on the floor in the closet.
Yes. So he's self Harry Pottered himself in the closet.
You know what? I also took over my parents' closet. We had a toy room. I was an only child, you guys, and I lived in a very big house. So I had a room called the toy room. It feels a little like...
You had a toy room.
Well...
An entire room in your place of living, just toys.
I did. Amazing. But I didn't have anybody to play with them with me.
That's like a monkey paw.
I don't know.
Right there.
I'm just saying. Like,
I want a room filled with toys. No one will play with me. Oh.
Don't get a board game for an only child. It's the worst present ever. Anything that says two or more players just causes pain. Anyways, I love you, Mom. My mom's watching. So, there's a closet in that room that was like I took over for a few weeks at one point, where I barricaded it with blankets. I decided that was where I was gonna sneak in there and sleep at night. It was my secret hideout, and I think that kids really like having secret hideouts. And so this leaves secret hideout. And you know what? As long as he's sleeping at some point in the night, if he wants to stay up till all hours right now, reading till his heart, you know, can't take till he falls.
So he falls
asleep.
And, which he has done.
And sleeping in the closet. I mean, whatever. Is he happy and is he healthy? Are those two, is that yes for both? Fine. You sleep in the closet. It's a carpeted floor. It's much nicer than the hardwood floors in our place. And so, we don't have a closet that he could sleep in at
that's
home.
That's true. That's
so
true.
This is, if you're going to sleep in a closet, it better be here, because that's not going to happen when we go home.
So, Leaf, if you're listening to this, when you're like 20 or something and you need material for your stand-up, right, you refused to sleep in the bottom bunk of a bunk bed so you could curl up like Harry Potter, which millennials are into Harry Potter. I don't know if the next generation will be.
I haven't let our kids read it yet, because I want to read it with them.
So reading books, just consuming those Minecraft books over and over and over again. Yeah, like we got them these encyclopedic, huge hardcover books about the Legend of Zelda games, because he just information, he just digests it like nothing else and retains it. I guess because kids retain stuff.
His
you know?
Brain is just really open and ready for it, and that's just how his brain works. He's just really into it. But yeah, I'm trying to get him into some more slow, methodical work, because I want him to be able to also sit for 30 minutes and do something. And so this morning we were doing a fuse bead project, which is, you know, like they're also called perler beads, those little plastic beads, and you iron them and they become things. So we were doing that for like an hour. That was great. He refuses to do anything that you really have to like count and make a pattern from. He still won't really count it, but he did do a pretty good job of actually following one of the patterns. He made a potion, which is great. So, and I decided I will do a more complicated one to show them it can be done. So maybe it'll be inspiring. I don't know. But I was like, well, maybe if I do one, then they'll do one too. So I'm making a Jigglypuff Pokemon perler bead.
Right. And she's using a grid of like 4x4 perler bead.
Yeah.
Of Jigglypuff, which is great. And it's taken you like an hour or two.
At least, yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty cool. And I have to go row by row, one row at a time. But it's really coming along.
Inch by inch, row by row. You know the song? Gonna let my garden grow.
What's that? What is that from?
It's probably Sesame Street or some animated thing.
I do know that song. From the 80s. I don't know why I know
it. They would wheel in the TV into your kindergarten class.
I know, I do know this. Na, 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 maybe it was like a weekly reader
the
thing.
The internet can tell us what it is.
Anyway, things overall have been pretty good. I do find myself trying to fight off the swamp of sadness, still fighting that off. But I think that is just coming from...
It's Pete Seeger.
Oh, yeah. Pete Seeger. Thanks, Pete. So I think that the swamp of sadness is just from not being in my space for so long and not having like access to my regular stuff and my regular life and seeing people that I love. And having that interaction on Clubhouse has been great, but that can only happen like late at night after the kids have been in bed. And lately I've been going to sleep early. So that's kind of how I've been doing a little bit. And we are going to go back, but then the kids are going to stay on screen school through the end of the year. We thought they were going to maybe be able to matriculate back into the school, but for various reasons, it seems like the best choice right now is to have them stay in screen school through the end of the year. Then they're both going to do camp. And we haven't talked about what the summer is really going to look like yet, but Leaf's doing 3 weeks of cooking camp. And Finn is going to do 2 weeks of gymnastics camp. And then maybe we'll come out back out here for a little bit. I don't know.
Maybe. Can we just say, where is he taking that that cooking camp? Give a plug for our friends over at
absolutely.
The Connected Chef. Yo.
Connected Chef. Kim Colicchio's company, the Connected Chef, they're offering this summer camp. And I know that Kim is going to take all the right precautions. It's mostly outside. Mm-hmm. And I know the space that she's used in the past is very big and airy and spacious. And I just feel like it's going to be okay. So I'm feeling good about it. I know that she's going to be probably fully vaccinated along with her whole team. And the numbers hopefully will be way low at that point. So everything is just going to feel a lot safer and better. And that's walkable from our house. Yeah. And then Finn's gymnastics camp, I just want to get him back into that. And then there hopefully will be just a lot of time There's only 1 week of overlap where they're both in camp at the same time, unfortunately. But that's just how the schedules worked out. I don't know if they're going to take more camps at this point because money-wise, I'm not sure that that's a good choice for us because both of those camps are actually a little pricey. But they're both things that they really like. And I don't know that I'm willing or interested in signing them up for something that they might not love right now. And so it just means like more time together. It'll be in our home and they'll be able to go to the playgrounds and they'll be able to ride their bikes and
we'll be you know,
see friends.
We'll be going to the outdoor places that we used to.
Yes. I mean, go to the beach, go swimming. We could go to the pool. Like, all these things feel so much more attainable.
Could you go to the pool though?
The pool was open last summer.
I know, but would you feel comfortable with our kids going maskless into the pool?
Maybe. Depending on what the numbers are looking like, maybe. Mm. Or to the beach, you know.
Would you wear a mask at the beach?
Probably not if I'm on my towel and the numbers are really low and stuff. Like, you know, it feel like a big outdoor space like that, you know, it feels possible, especially on a weekday when it's not as crowded. And I'm going to be having a lot more one-on-one time with the kids because, like I said, there's only 1 week of overlap where they're both in camp at the same time. So yeah. There's going to be 2 weeks where it's like me and Finn time, and there's going to, which he's the younger one, he'll be 6 at that point. And then there'll be 1 week of me and Leaf time, and that'll be cool. Like, we could do what he wants to do. So, yeah. The only thing that we're not going to do is maybe take, I don't know when I'm going to feel comfortable taking public transportation again.
Yes, and I've heard from very cynical people, but people who still live in the city, that every time you get on the subway, there's just people without masks just hanging out. And that's just a reality of the subway. Is there's behavior on the subway often that, you know, it's out of your control. We live in the city, which means there's this a lot of ideas happening all at the same time. And out here, we've been pretty isolated. But back in the city, it's like everyone is pretty tightly packed.
Well, you're depending on everybody to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when people aren't doing the right thing, then it becomes difficult to know what the next right choice is. That's my internal dialogue with myself, I think, because part of me wants to call it out and say, hey, that's not right. Another part of me is self-preservation mode and wants to leave, but then that affects my day and like what I need to be doing or where I need to go. And in a lot of ways, it just becomes easier to not invite that kind of scenario yet. I just don't think I'm ready to have to like make choices like that.
Yes.
Where I was making choices like that all the time. I was used to that. Because like some mentally not well person would come on the train before the pandemic and you have to make a choice. Do I stay on the train or do I get off the train? Right?
Right.
I mean, that's an easy one where it's like, oh, or how bad does this smell right now? Can I sit through this?
Oh no, I'm not talking about just like home, stinky homeless people. I'm talking about like regular schmoes that are just going about their day without a mask.
I know.
On the subway.
I think what I'm trying to get at is like I miss having to make choices that seem simple like that at this point.
Hmm.
But the choice, being confronted with a situation that might affect me in health wise, that is a much bigger thing, and I don't know that I'm ready for that, like, yet. I don't know when I'll be ready for it, but I just have to ease my way back into the pool and a little bit of exposure to, like, how things are. And just the numbers are going to be lower. I know this. I just believe it in my heart that when we go back at the end of May, the numbers are going to be lower. It's going to be reflective of what happened last summer, and that hopefully the numbers will continue to stay low into the fall because so many people will be vaccinated.
Wouldn't that be nice if we hit like percentages that people would call like herd immunity by the opening of schools in fall 2021? Remember when it seemed like such a distant thing like a year ago when people were talking about like, the Met's going to reopen in fall 2021, guys. And all of us are like, oh, my God. You know, does that mean theater? Because if you look to these huge institutions for like, what are they doing? That kind of sets the tone. When the Met for, you know, and it has its own issues and problems, etc., said, okay, no more shows until 2021. Everyone, including us, were like, wow, it seems so far away.
Yeah.
But here we are, and it seems like so close. Man, that's only like, you know, 6 months. But it's like, it's doable. We just got to sweat it out in a New York City apartment with the ACs up, you know, for the summer, and do some in-person shows outside. And then when fall comes, we'll be ready to do like a glut of things, like maybe in schools, maybe in libraries. I just thought today, I got to write this down, that we have to, I'm going to send a postcard to everybody who we used to do shows for on the regular.
Yeah.
And then spend like a few $100 and just shoot out postcards and hopefully people will.
Yeah, let's talk about that after the podcast, because I have thoughts about
that. I'm just gonna write that down. Okay. Yes. So let's wrap it up. See, unless you have something burning to talk about.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I would not be completely honest if I didn't say that I was feeling apprehensive about the big transition of going back. And that this podcast for me, since we've done it, has always been about us being really, really honest about where we're at and what we're feeling. And I, as much as I really want to feel excited about going back, but I have to be totally honest with you guys and just let you know that I'm feeling really tense and like, nervous about it. And I think that that's just because I've been away for so long, and I want to know in my heart that when I get back, I'm going to feel great. And I don't feel like I know that. And so, you know, these are things that I've been thinking about a lot, and I'll just keep you guys updated, as to how that feels. But I've never been away from, my home since having been an adult, for this long. And I've never been away from like my people outside of like you and the kids, for this long as well. It's been over a year since I've seen my family, and it's been over a year since I've seen, a lot of my friends and my chosen family. So, anyway, I think all of that just kind of builds, this feeling of, like what was my life, and trying to remember what it was all the time. I'm always trying to remember what my life was because it's not here.
That's so funny.
I'm just trying to share like what's been going on in my brain a little bit in case somebody else can relate. And if nobody else can relate, then I guess I'm just on my own. But, I'm constantly trying to remember what my life was like. And for like the first 6 months of being out here, that was fairly easy. And then as time continues to go on, I'm like wacko from Wacky Land. My dippy stick is starting to get low and I start to disappear. It feels a little bit. I know that that's not true. And I'm surrounded by people that I love. And I do have some of my things here. But there's just something about being in your space with your stuff and your life. And I think that... my hope is that when I get back there, I'm just going to feel a whole lot better and calmer overall. So anyway, that's just me sharing. And if anybody can relate, you made me really dark.
Sorry. I thought I was fixing things, but I just shouldn't have messed with it.
So anyway, Chad, any closing thoughts or things that you want to share? Your parents just got home from church. His parents are going to church again.
My parents went to church.
We don't know how we feel about that.
I know how I feel about that.
Oh, I was being diplomatic.
Why'd you go to church? You got one shot. You can't feel invincible. You got to take second shot and then wait 2 weeks. And even then, you got to wear a mask. Anyway, so.
I think it's representative of how a lot of people are feeling
now. I mean, it's the springtime.
It's over, right? Isn't it over? Maybe if I act like it's over, it'll be over. It's like you're secreting it away, but secret this away.
I want to say that whomever, you know, the preacher, the priest, or whoever made the decision to not have people in this church, the church that I grew up in, for months and months and months was the right decision. Now they're bringing people back. I do not agree with that at all. But at the same time, I'm not involved with it at all, so I don't know if there's restrictions or, you know, like, or what, if anything is happening. All I know is that my parents went to church and that they sat probably wearing masks in a big open church, and now they're back here.
Yeah. So anyway, they're back, and we're going to have our kids
wrapping things up.
Stop playing Minecraft for an hour, and we'll hopefully see you in a week. And if there's anything you guys want us to talk about, you should let us know, because you know, we're just gonna keep free flowing over here.
I like this two week format, because we have more to talk about. You know, sometimes, because I ran a weekly podcast for six years, it feels like, oh man, it's that time again. Woof, what am I gonna talk about this week?
Something to talk about, though. We always find something to talk about. We were just super, super busy, and then I think I was just, like, burnt out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just true life stuff. Yeah. But if you haven't checked out the Audible podcast, please do that, Sesame Street with Foley and Friends. You can leave a little rating. That would be so nice. And also, you could rate this podcast on whatever you're listening to it on. And if you like it, you should let us know, because I never know who listens to this thing. But it's fun for us to do, and it's like a little time capsule of what life has been like.
That's right. So, the Puppet Parent Pandemic Podcast.
Four P's. P to the fourth power.
I was thinking, if we wrap this up on episode 50, you know, like, that would take us like into the summer to be like, we're back and that's the end. Then I would relabel this the Puppet Parent Pandemic Podcast, because that is what has dominated what we've talked about and what's going on in our lives.
Well, that's
like
why
during,
it started.
During this whole thing.
Well, we'll see how we feel.
Yeah.
It's always been, we'll see how we feel. And what do you guys want? Are you interested in this? Are you even listening? Who knows? All right. So we're going to say goodbye. Have a great week. And again, we always want to remind people that if you're feeling sad, you don't have things that you feel like you're looking forward to, maybe you are not sure if you're going to be able to see the sun come up the next day, please find somebody to talk to. Because we're going to get through this, and it's going to be great. And there are so many people who love you and who want to help you out. So find somebody to talk to, because we want to see you at the end of this, and we love you.
That's right. Seek professional help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a joke.
No, okay. Not a joke.
Not at all. So thanks once again. We are the Puppet Parents Podcast. You can check out the rest of these episodes wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, all the pod trackers, et cetera, et cetera. If there is a place that you like to get your podcasts from that we are not on, let us know. Send us a message over Facebook or Instagram or something. You can also email us at info@wondersparkpuppets.com. You can download the MP3s directly over at puppetparentpodcast.com. And hey, we got a couple new cute photos of us up on that website. And if you needed copy for some kind of article that you're writing about this podcast, because why not? All that beautiful copy is typed out there on our official website that we pay too much for. Man, I'm going to contact Wix and ask them, can we just downgrade that like $30? Anyway, thanks again.
Thank
and we'll
you
see
so
you
much.
Next time.
Bye. Bye-bye.